Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
Well, Elon Musk is now the richest person on the planet.
More than half the satellites in space are owned and controlled by one man.
Well, he's a legitimate super genius. I mean, legitimate.
He says he's always voted for Democrats, but this year it will be different. He'll vote Republican.
There is a reason the U.S. government is so reliant on him.
Elon Musk is a scam artist, and he's done nothing.
Anything he does is fascinating to people.
Welcome to Elon Inc., Bloomberg's weekly podcast about Elon Musk. It's Tuesday, April 9th. I'm your host, David Papadopoulos. Today, we will be talking about two very different bits of news coming from Elon's empire. First, there's Elon's promise of robo-taxis. Then, there's trouble brewing for him in Brazil, where X is fighting the courts over disinformation allegations. So we're going to start with X in Brazil. And to do so, we are joined by Sasha Eisenberg, a former Bloomberg News reporter who now covers technology and politics and is the author of the just-released book, The Lie Detectives, In Search of a Playbook for Winning Elections in the Disinformation Age. Welcome, Sasha.
Great to be with you all. Thanks.
And Kurt Wagner, who covers X for us here at Bloomberg. Hello, Kurt.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Okay, so Sasha, I swear I've been trying to keep up with all the twists and turns of this X story in Brazil. It's been really hard because it's happening really fast. Explain for us what is going on here.
Brazil has the most aggressive election regulator in the world. I mean, at least in a democracy. I guess you can make the claim that Vladimir Putin was a pretty aggressive election regulator last month in Russia. But there's the Supreme Electoral Tribunal in Brasilia is nominally a court, but not really in the way that we would recognize. It also serves as a prosecutor, a regulatory body, the nation's leading elections administrator. And since 2018, it has been incredibly aggressive at trying to police what it calls disinformation online. And a lot of that means sending orders to tech companies that operate in Brazil, demanding that they take down accounts, take down individual pieces of content. And most of the tech companies have sort of acquiesced to this as a cost of doing business in Brazil. What happened recently is that Elon Musk decided that he was going to be more adversarial with the court than any other major tech company has been in the last few years. And that's sort of the moment we're in.
Okay, so Sasha, just get for one second, just, you know, take another step back a little bit and explain the history of Musk and the previous president there in Brazil, the far-right president Bolsonaro, who lost an election that you were there reporting on. And give us a little bit more about the court, the Supreme Court's crackdown on disinformation that it believes is being spun largely by this group of allies of Bolsonaro.
Yeah, so Bolsonaro wins in 2018, and after the election, much as in the United States after 2016, people started to look deeply at online disinformation, and in our case, the role of Russian intelligence services, there was a lot of attention paid to WhatsApp groups in which Bolsonaro supporters hired marketing agencies to spread lies within these sort of large groups that function as a sort of hybrid of a group text and broadcast platform. And this sort of furor about online disinformation, you know, is set against a backdrop in Brazil of 20 years of dictatorship that has made the country incredibly sensitive, I think, to the threat of what it thinks of as sort of totalitarian propaganda.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear on that point, right, Sasha, the Brazilian dictatorship only ends in the late 80s. And so democracy there is indeed pretty young and, as many Brazilians see it, pretty fragile.
Exactly. And so I think, you know, and just the other part of this legal context is that Brazil's constitution doesn't have anything approaching the First Amendment. There's no absolute guarantee of free speech. And so Brazilian courts are weighing free expression concerns against a lot of other priorities. And they put a lot of weight on basically trying to resist totalitarian, return of a totalitarian order. And so this court emerges and cobbles together a lot. This court's been around for a while, but it starts to cobble together authority in the last few years, sometimes from laws that were passed decades ago before the internet was in sight. And it's basically anointed itself the chief definer and defender of truth online. And there's nothing that we would recognize as a conventional appeals process or due process. And the chief justice of this court, Alexandre de Moraes, became the sort of central figure in the 2022 election cycle. A lot of days that year, he was in more headlines than either Lula or Bolsonaro because this court was issuing orders about what could or cannot be said online and what the punishments would be for either individuals or tech companies that violated it.
Lula, of course, being the leftist candidate, Bolsonaro's rival in that 2022 election, who won office and returned to power 15 or 20 years after having been in previously. Yeah, I saw, Sasha, that Elon has challenged the Supreme Court Judge G. Moraes to a debate. I would be shocked, okay, personally, if this judge says, oh yeah, let me hop on your spaces and do this little debate. Brazilians tend not to react very favorably to that kind of thing. It's a little condescending. I don't think you would ask Chief Justice Roberts to hop on a space and debate elements of free speech here.
No, and the whole way Musk has approached this in the last week has been that he's just discovering something that anybody who's paid attention to how the internet works in Brazil over the last 6 or 7 years would know already, which doesn't seem to be a totally uncommon sort of posture of his. But in this case, the fact is that he's acting for something unusual about these orders. And I think from the context of an American idea of the Constitution, there may be, but in the context of how business and politics and law function in Brazil, it hasn't been of late.
So he decided to be more adversarial, which led to, in the past 72, 96 hours, this flurry of activity, which leads us where exactly? As, you know, I saw frantic tweets or X posts from Musk last night saying, we're trying to rush our employees in Brazil to a safe place, and so on and so forth. Where exactly do things stand?
So people have been jailed as a result of orders from this electoral court. So it is not entirely far-fetched to suggest that that could be an outcome. But by and large, the way that this court has worked is it has sent orders to tech companies, often attached to large fines, often tallied in the hours for not taking down content. And so ultimately, I think that Musk will have a decision to make. Does he want to do business in Brazil with X, in which case he will have to almost certainly acquiesce to the court's orders, or decide that he is willing to forego a major market? And every other company, Google, YouTube, Facebook, that has been in this situation has decided to go along with the court's orders because I think that the business logic of it is sort of indisputable. Yeah. To them.
Now, Kurt, for X, Brazil happens to be a pretty important market, no?
Yeah, it is. I've seen a few estimates because they don't break it out or haven't historically broken it out on financial statements or anything like that. But anywhere from maybe the sixth largest market for X to the fourth largest market, tens of millions of users, certainly. And obviously, we've talked on the show about X's business and how it's struggling right now to build, you know, any type of consistency with its advertising business. So, you know, walking away from your fourth, fifth, sixth largest market is not an insignificant trade-off for someone like Elon Musk, especially given the state of X's business at the moment.
Yeah, X is now a private company. So we don't know just exactly how much revenue the Brazilian market throws off for the company. Is that correct?
That's right. We know the top market historically is the U.S. far and away. Second is Japan, pretty much far and away as well. If there was anything similar to this in the U.S. or Japan, that might be a death blow to X, honestly. But I think Brazil, while certainly important, I think there's clearly a calculus here by Elon, right? He's willing to take this stand and has said this might mean that we have to close our office in the country. This might mean that X gets banned, and we're willing to make that trade-off. I don't think he'd be doing that if this was going to put the company into bankruptcy or something like that. So I think it's significant, certainly. I don't think it's a crippling decision in the way that it might be in a few other markets for them.
Is this a Brazil-specific thing, or is this something that could rear its head elsewhere?
There's no other body in the world that polices political content online in a country the way that this electoral court in Brazil does. So it is, the political and legal environment in which this is taking place is just radically different than in the US or Japan or any of the other countries where X has a large footprint.
So Kurt, by the way, I read somewhere that the judge has essentially said, you put these accounts back up, these accounts that I am banning, and you run the risk of being fined $20,000 per day per account. For a company X that's struggling to produce much money or God forbid, profits, that seems like an awful lot of money to me. But let me ask you this. How do we understand, as we look at Musk's position here and the tack he's taking in Brazil, how do we square that with the stance he's taking, for instance, in China?
Well, this is what I was just going to bring up, is that this is a unique response from Elon, because we've seen X, and there's been reported examples since he took over of them essentially following these types of orders in other countries. So in India, for example, the government has said, hey, you need to take down these accounts. And they've said, well, we don't want to, but that's the cost of doing business in India. Same thing has happened in Turkey, right? And yet here in Brazil, he's decided to take a different approach and say, well, even though I'm willing to follow the laws of the land in these other countries we operate in, here's where I draw the line. And it's interesting that this is the market in which he chose to do that. There was a great newsletter by Casey Newton, who writes the Platformer newsletter, and he commented about this yesterday. And I just want to read a sentence from him, because I thought it summarized this whole thing. He says, it also seems notable that of all the embattled minority groups that X could have chosen to stand behind, Musk has chosen the group dedicated to the false proposition that Bolsonaro won the election, right? So the idea being that he could be taking a similar stance in several countries and markets around the world. He happens to be doing it in Brazil, where he's leaning into this idea of supporting members of the far right, right? Or a political candidate who represents the far right. And I think given the types of things he's tweeting right now in the US, that sort of aligns maybe ideologically with what we've seen from him recently.
Yeah, I've talked a lot about the differences between Brazil and the United States, but I think one way that things are very similar is that the culture wars are very much in alignment in these two countries. And so Bolsonaro has attached himself to Trump. Trump has endorsed Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro has endorsed Trump. The sort of MAGA movement in the U.S. is intertwined with Bolsonaro's movement. The election denial stuff that is at the core of this is pretty analogous to what we've heard post-2020 in the U.S. And so I think if you need an explanation as to why Musk has gone here and not against other authoritarian governments that have put demands on him and make claims of free speech, it's because the culture war terrain is the same thing that he's playing in the U.S. every day.
Somewhat similar to the storming of the Capitol on January 6th here in the United States, there was a siege, Sasha, after Lula was inaugurated, after he defeated Bolsonaro a couple years ago. Maybe not quite the same extent, but there was certainly damage done and authorities were rattled there in Brazil.
So it sort of is all of the at least American right-wing conspiracies about state power going after MAGA supporters wrapped up actually in one legal institution in Brasilia.
And so, Kurt, to wrap up here, again, as we look ahead to elections, not just here in the U.S., but in other countries, is this, I suppose it's hard to know, but as we look into our crystal ball, is this Musk laying out a new rule or a new role for himself, I should say, as arbiter of disinformation?
I mean, he's been laying the groundwork for something like this for a while, I feel, just based on the things that he's tweeting about, the ways, the types of conversations he's choosing to weigh in the U.S., clearly very much interested in my opinion, trying to shape or influence the election conversation here. And so it's not really surprising to me, I guess, that he would do the same elsewhere. The one thing I would just point out, perhaps, is that, you know, when Elon first took over X, when he was asked about his opinions on speech and how he was going to police the network, he was basically like, oh, this is, I'm paraphrasing here, but like, hey, this is easy. We're just going to follow the rules, follow the laws, right? If it's against the law, we take it down. And if it's within the law, it's fair game. And a lot of smart people were like, this is a way oversimplified way of thinking about this, right? For this very reason, because in every different country, there's different laws and different rules and going to be different expectations. And I feel, you know, it's interesting, again, that he's finally now pushing back against someone or a court in this case. And I'm curious to see what happens in the United States when at some point they're going to get a request from the U.S. government about some, whether it's a terrorist organization or a white nationalist group or whatever it is. Like, it seems inevitable this is going to happen in the U.S. at some point. And I'm curious if he will respond in the same way, bolstered by the fact that he's doing it now in Brazil. And it seems to be getting encouragement, obviously, from a lot of people who support him.
Well, listen, Sasha, Kurt, when that moment happens, we will most certainly have you both back on. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Okay, so now we have two of our regulars on to talk about the robo-taxi. Dana Hull, our Elon Musk reporter. Good afternoon, Dana.
Hello, hello.
And Max Chafkin, senior reporter at Bloomberg Businessweek. Hello, Max.
Hey, David.
Hey. So, all right, Dana, as my week is wrapping up on Friday, and I'm finally like looking to coast into the weekend. We get this X post from Elon saying, drum roll, please, the robo-taxi cometh on the 8th of August. What exactly are we expecting on the 8th of August? And why has Mr. Musk decided to roll this out right now?
Okay, so to back up for a minute, on Friday morning, Reuters published this kind of bombshell piece that said that Tesla was completely scrapping plans for a $25,000 car and focusing on the robo-taxi instead, and the stock went down. Then Musk tweeted that Reuters was lying, and then he tweeted that the robo-taxi unveiling would be on August 8th, like 4 months from now. So there was a lot happening that day. And if you read the Walter Isaacson book, you know that within Tesla, there was this big debate about whether the robotaxi should come first or the $25,000 car should come first. And ultimately, they decided that they were going to build both on the same next generation platform that was going to use this unboxed assembly process. To this date, like, Tesla itself has not really clarified what the hell is going on. And I flew to LA over the weekend to try to buttonhole Franz von Holzhausen, their chief designer, to ask him, is this $25,000 car dead, delayed, on the back burner?
What did he say?
He said, stay tuned, don't believe everything that you read. So anyway, the bottom line is that clearly Elon Musk has decided that the robotaxi is the priority, because we are now going to see a robotaxi in August. They haven't said anything about unveiling the $25,000 car. And what's happening with the stock right now is that, once again, like, Musk is kind of like pumping up the faithful and the retail shareholders and the people that are betting big on AI and autonomy with this promise, with this idea that Tesla is a leader in AI and that their full self-driving software is so good and advancing so quickly, thanks to all of the data that they've collected, that they are really on this path to eventually having a robotaxi. So I think it's just a very interesting dynamic. It's one we've seen outplayed before, where, like, they dangle a new product to keep the story alive. And it worked. I mean, the stock went up Friday after his tweet. The shares were up roughly 5% Monday. They've opened slightly positive today. It's fascinating.
Yeah, Max, we've been over this before. This is a tried and true play from the Elon Musk playbook, which is when other things aren't going great and the narrative is going against you and the stock is going down, down, and down, which it is after years of absolutely skyrocketing. Tesla has been tumbling this year. And so you say, look over here, I've got this thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I predicted this last week. If you believe the full self-driving story, which I think, as we've talked about in this podcast, lots of reasons to be skeptical of that story. You know, they've been talking about it for basically a decade and haven't made a ton of, like, you know, verifiable progress. If you believe the story, nonetheless, then these results don't matter that much, because in the future, the robotaxis are going to come and it's going to change everything. And so I think we're going to see over the next few months, that's going to be the story they go with. You know, Elon Musk himself, during the last earnings call, he said, we're between these two growth ways. That's kind of code for sales aren't so good. And his solution, the proposed solution during that call, which just happened, was that they were going to work on this lower cost EV. And so that's what makes this Reuters thing so surprising. And Elon Musk's, he said Reuters is lying, but he's also at the same time kind of tacitly confirmed it by saying that they're having this robotaxi unveiling. He's also replied to some Tesla influencers who have posited that this, it's not that we're killing the Model 2, it's that we're prioritizing the robotaxi. But however you frame this, it's a change from what he said, and it's kind of a big change.
So, Dan, I want you to take even a further step back for the uninitiated here and remind us of the exact technical differences between autopilot, full self-driving, and robotaxi, and how they interact.
So to go way back, I mean, Elon has been talking about these ideas since Master Plan Part 2, which was published in...
Who could forget that
which was published in July of 2016. And he talked about pursuing the master plan and this idea that eventually your car will be able to drive itself and it will be able to make money for you, the owner, instead of sitting parked in front of your house or sitting in a garage. Well, you're at work, David. Your car can join the shared Tesla fleet and cruise around and operate as like an Uber and make money for you, and that you will gain, you will make money using your car. And so this promise of this shared autonomous fleet has been part of the plan for a long time. And then a couple of years ago, Tesla said that they were creating a dedicated robotaxi at their investor day, in March of 2023. They did this big thing about the next generation platform was going to be the cheaper car and the robotaxi built on the same platform. But the vehicles were under a sheet, so we didn't really see what they looked like. And I think what you're seeing now is that Tesla does have a lot of data. They have thousands of customers driving on autopilot already, and then a growing number of customers who have bought what they call FSD, And all of that data is feeding back into the algorithm, and they're training their neural networks on it. And they just, Tesla announced, like also on Friday, that Tesla customers have now driven 1 billion miles on FSD. That's a lot of miles. And like,
yeah, it sounds like a lot.
I mean, it sounds like a lot. How they like are, what exactly they're doing with the data, how they're labeling it is unclear, but they have a lot of data that they are using, and people who have FSD are really excited about it. They're like, this is a step change. It's so much better. It's driving point to point with no interventions. I mean, there's videos all over YouTube and X of owners being like, yeah, like I've had problems with FSD in the past, but version 12.3 is really good. It's getting really better.
So the idea is, as it improves and improves and improves, the robot does, it both helps people drive their cars with full self-driving. And then it is in turn what is going to power these drones of sorts that will be driving themselves, perhaps even without a wheel, I guess. I mean, do we know, are these robotaxis, they're going to be wheel-less?
That's the speculation.
In 2040, maybe? I mean, yeah, that's the plan, like Dan is saying.
I'm not going to see a wheel-less car on August 8th.
You might see a wheelless car on August 8th. I'd like to remind everyone that there have been a lot of these AI demos, and they have been extreme, as Dana kind of hinted, they've been extremely optimistic. There was the first version of the robot was a guy in a Lycra suit.
I like that one.
I would not be surprised if we see something on that level. In other words, like something that looks like a robotaxi, but may not, in fact, be one.
It's actually a horse.
Listen, the thing is, Dana's right. Like, they do have this big data set, and they are doing something that is, I think, technically interesting and impressive. Their driver assistance system is either as good or better, depending on who you talk to, as the other market-leading driver assistance systems. But that is not a robo-taxi. A robo-taxi has to be a lot better than a car that is a human driver at it at all times. One other thing that Elon did recently is he changed the name of this product from FSD Beta, full self-driving beta, to FSD parenthetical supervised, which is kind of like saying full self-driving parenthetical, but not actually self-driving. Right. And California, which regulates this industry the most closely, tracks makes companies report how many miles of robo-taxi driving they've done each year. You can look this up. It's on the web. Tesla has one of these permits. Waymo drove several million miles. Cruise, the other market leader, having huge problems getting to market, drove millions of miles. Tesla drove 0 miles. There's no indication that they've done a ton of real robo-taxi driving. Like, they may be a very long way from this, from the, like, grand plan of the drones.
Yeah, so to jump into that a little bit more, Dana, in the robo-taxi race to market, where exactly do we think Tesla fits right now? Is it in the lead?
So they just have taken a very different approach. Like, Waymo is offering robo-taxi rides in cities like San Francisco and LA and Phoenix and Austin. And they're doing like these rides in these kind of geofenced areas where they've mapped the entire terrain. Tesla's approach is like, unleash FSD onto the world. Legally and regulatory-wise, like, customers are still in control, but let's use that data to, like, train our neural net, and then eventually we will get there. And I think what we're going to see on August 8th is they will take the sheet off of the design, but it doesn't mean that it's actually, like, ready. It's just, like, a recruiting event so that, like, people that are interested in AI will join the company. And Tesla does this over and over again. They unveil a product, but it's, like, years until the product is actually in the market. I mean, we first saw the Cybertruck in 2019. They're not even breaking out sales of the Cybertruck yet, even though I did see many Cybertrucks when I was at this event in LA. So I just want to, like, caution everyone that just because they're going to have a product unveiling on August 8th doesn't mean that a shared robotaxi fleet is going to
hit the market.
Some people are saying we're not going to see this for a decade.
But having said that, we will still do a watch party on August 8th. I'm going to bring the popcorn. I guess to that point, though, that we've seen this show before, right, where he creates a lot of hype and pomp and circumstance around the next big thing to come as a means of keeping the stock elevated at incredibly lofty valuations. Are we getting diminishing returns from that gambit, Max Chafkin, or does it still work as brilliantly as it always does? As Dana said earlier, the stock rose 5% yesterday, and it started up again today.
All right. A little context, though. The stock had been going down quite a bit. The stock was at a relative low point there. I don't think these investors are being totally irrational. I think this robotaxi, if I were betting on it, I would bet on more than a decade. But if you're an investor and you're looking at a company that, if it's just a car company, is worth some tiny fraction of where it is, it does seem the better bet is the long shot bet for the robotaxi. Even if they're skeptics like me saying, hey, it's going to take a long time, I think from an investor perspective, it makes sense. It's the only strategy he actually
has. Didn't he at some point say, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, that without the robotaxi's gambit, Tesla's essentially worth some iteration of nothing?
If you're somebody who believes deeply in the kind of like electric future and not the, you know, aggrandizement of Elon Musk, but in deploying millions of electric cars and arresting climate change, then this is kind of like a depressing development because you have the guy, essentially the architect of the rise of the electric car, kind of turning his back on it. I mean, the original master plan part was originally there was going to be a sports car and then an expensive car, and then you're eventually going to get to this $25,000 EV. And if we don't see that, then in some sense, like that is a huge pivot from what the dream of Tesla was and what I think the brand of Tesla is still to many people.
Well, we have to remember to remind everyone that, the original mission was the advent of electrification. Then Google came along and started doing Waymo, and Elon Musk here in Silicon Valley was like, oh my God, we got to get on this. And Tesla like added autonomy to the mission. And when we're in this world where every automaker has some kind of electric vehicle offering, being just like a pure EV maker is no longer enough of a differentiator. And I have to say, I talked to a lot of investors over the weekend, and a lot of long-term investors like are very excited about this. They're making the point that like software sales is a much better play with higher margins than manufacturing. Manufacturing is really tough, and like sales are like interest rates are high and sales are lousy right now. So like why go to all the expense of making the cheaper car when like you're not even selling all the Model Ys and Model 3s that you have in inventory? Focus on the robotaxi. That makes sense. And so to some of the diehards, like this is the master plan is finally coming to fruition.
Does he need to pen a new master plan? Are we still good with part
no? They did. They did master plan. They did trois. Master plan part three. They did master plan okay, trois. Was smokes. A year ago.
I guess I missed it.
But the thing is, like the it's probably a better move if the choice is try to sell this $25,000 car or convince some fanboy who hasn't paid the $12,000 for full self-driving. Like software margins are, as Dana says, like a lot better than automotive margins. And if these Chinese companies and Ford and other Hyundai and GM making competent mid-range or even low-end cars, you do sort of understand why Elon Musk is like feeling like the distracted boyfriend where you have climate change here and robotaxi, over there.
I'll also just say that there is something attractive about the idea of, as I ponder my retirement down the road, of owning a fleet of these things and having them just spit out all this money. And while they're just driving around churning out money for me, I take that money and I gamble and I lose it at the racetrack. That sounds pretty damn good, I gotta say.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel has become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
We need to get to our final segment here, which we are calling, and this is a totally new one. We've done feuds of the week in the past, but that's not what this is. This is the enchantment of the week. Okay. I didn't come up with that word. I think someone else did. We're going enchantment of the week. Elon Musk and Nelson Peltz, the investor. We're just going to play the tape from CNBC.
Elon is a friend of mine. I think the world of him. This guy has no ego. He is willing to listen to anybody. It has the same attitude we do, that will steal any good idea and be proud of it. He's a brilliant guy. Understands so many things about the world, and all you want to do is listen to a lot of what he's got to say, but he's a good listener as well.
So, Dana, Elon has no ego, I am told. What's going on here? What led Nelson Peltz to say these things?
So I'm fascinated by this budding bromance, which has been going on for a while. Nelson Peltz lives in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I guess commutes back and forth between Florida and New York. Elon Musk has been to Palm Beach like three times this year. And I think the reason why is because Peltz and Elon have joined forces against this Disney thing. So Peltz waged this like proxy battle with Disney. He was trying to get his slate directed to the Disney board. They lost, but they both hate Bob Iger, apparently, or they are united in their like fear that Disney has become too woke or whatever you want to call it.
Is it that Peltz hates Iger or just feels like he's leading the company down the wrong track?
I guess it's the latter. Yeah, hate is perhaps too strong a word. But we saw Musk come out and basically urge people to vote for Peltz's slate. I mean, and Musk was calling investors on behalf of Peltz. The other thing that's going on is that both men seem to be in the Donald Trump camp when it comes to the 2024 election. Peltz has hosted fundraisers for Trump. Elon certainly seems to be indicating that he is more likely to endorse Trump than Biden. He hasn't actively endorsed yet, but like the politically they are aligned, and they both also share a lot of concerns about immigration. So I think that they're in cahoots on more than this Disney thing, and I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Max, the one of the things that jumped out at me about this was as Elon urges his followers or those of his followers who happen to be Disney shareholders to back Nelson Peltz in this proxy fight. Nelson Peltz, indeed, this longtime activist investor. But the funny thing is, the vote was pretty much already over.
Yeah, this is, like, I don't know. I think Dan is right. They're spending time together. They certainly have some shared interests. You listen to that Nelson Peltz endorsement, and I don't know about you, but I don't think he knows Elon very well, because that is not a very accurate description.
Yeah, I don't know that Elon would say those things about Elon.
No, of course not. It's just like he's like a guy who is trying to make the world's richest man happy. And we've heard this. I've heard that exact thing five or six times this year from Alex Jones and various right-wing politicians on Twitter spaces. He's just saying a standard patter of pro-Elon things as a kind of thank you for this endorsement. And this endorsement was like super tepid. Elon didn't say Nelson's vision for Disney is great. He comes in the 11th hour, basically when Peltz is already about to lose this thing, and says, I don't own any Disney shares, but I would buy some if Nelson, you know, wins, which to me is not the kind of like full-throated activist investor. This is sort of low energy activism. And I think the truth is that, number one, I don't think Elon really wants to be an activist investor because he famously hates activist investors. Yeah. And like he has made comments about activist investors, not only in the context of Tesla, but in general. Like it is not a thing that he in the past has seemed to value. I don't think he is the kind of person who, at least in the past, would have said very nice things about somebody like Nelson Peltz. And the other thing, right, is he just has bigger fish to fry. He's a little bit mad, I think, at Bob Iger over the Twitter ads or whatever, but it's just not a huge issue, and it's not something that serves him well to be like sucked into either.
So, Dana, on that point, to wrap up here, is this enchantment of the week actually really just a feud of the week in disguise, i.e., this is really just him trying to stick it to Iger?
I think it's going to be like a low burn enchantment that's going to continue into the election season. That's my prediction.
Excellent.
There we are. Okay. Well, we will watch this play out. Max, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Dana, great to see you.
Always.
This episode was produced by our supervising producer, Magnus Henriksen. Naomi Shaven and Rehan Harmansi are our senior editors. The idea for this very show also came from Rehan. Blake Maples handles engineering, and we get special editing assistance from Jeff Grocott. The Elon Inc. theme is written and performed by Taka Yasuzawa and Alex Sugiura. Brendan Francis Noonan is our executive producer, and Sage Bauman is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. I'm David Papadopoulos. If you have a minute, rate and review our show. It'll help other listeners find us. See you next week.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.